Welcome to the System Speak podcast, a podcast about dissociative identity disorder. If you are new to the podcast, we recommend starting at the beginning episodes and listen in order to hear our story and what we have learned through this endeavor. Current episodes may be more applicable to longtime listeners and are likely to contain more advanced topics, emotional or other triggering content, and/or reference earlier episodes that provide more context to what we are currently learning and experiencing. As always, please care for yourself during and after listening to the podcast. Thank you.
Hello. How is this level?
It's lovely.
Yeah.
A couple things.
Oh, we're starting.
We are using new microphones. After the great writing on the table disaster.
Sorry about that.
Can you hear me? I don't know yet. I hope this works. The other thing is that we have been re-releasing the OG episodes.
Yeah. The
original episodes, putting things back up. So it has been a bit of an emotional roller coaster. Really, it is about feeling safe enough for what is out there and how to tell that now to learn that. What I learned at the retreat is that when I do not feel safe and withdraw, it harms the people in my life that I care about, which is unfortunate.
It is unfortunate.
Also unpleasant, as it turns out.
Super unpleasant. And also, it's understandable that that's still a thing you're learning.
All the things are true, right?
Yeah.
So I began to think, if I am applying the lessons I learned on the retreat and from the rupture, which is now called the hiccup, yes. So we're making progress in healing and repairing. But if that was difficult, regardless of like all the reasons and the nuances of experiences, if that was difficult, then what else is difficult? Like when it feels hard to do the community, or when it feels hard to leave the podcast up and episodes come down, that does not feel safe to people.
Right. It feels like we're losing you, which is very scary for people that maybe have relational and abandonment trauma.
So, life lessons. I am trying to do this. So, it's also valid, like, again, both things are true. It is valid to make sure what is put out there I feel safe and comfortable with. And also valid that if I'm going to put it out there, it needs to just be there so that people can feel safe with it and, like, depend on it in a healthy way as a resource. I can't say here's the resource and then take it away.
Right. Like in an object permanence kind of way.
Oh, that hurts.
I'm sorry.
No, it's truth. It's truth. And I feel like this is just what we've been talking about how it's hard to do what wasn't done for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even hard. Like I talk about undissociating and undaydreaming, but when it's literally something you don't know, which is not the same as not looking or seeing what's not there, that is really, really tricky for how do you heal that? How do you do differently? How do I be better, do better? Not in a shaming or disparaging way, been in wanting to tend to the people I care about. How do I improve that and increase my capacity when I don't even know it's a thing?
Yeah.
Which is part of why it's so important for us to have hard conversations.
Well, and that was one of the hard conversations we had, is of asking you to listen when those who see you and love you might tell you something that you don't experience yourself. But trusting when they are telling you they're seeing it, kind of.
One of the things in that conversation that came up was about I can't over-function with certain people inside me or shirts or altars or parts in a way that is so out of balance that others are ignored, because then I'm causing harm to me and to others.
Yeah.
So when I got called out for that, one of the things that came to mind during the retreat in the mapping section was when I shared the circle notebook that I need to do that for my new therapist. Well, for me, but I mean with my new therapist, like a new one, because mm-hmm. that one really, I've struggled to hold on to it through all the changing of therapists. I think that's miraculous and I get a star for that, like a badge.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to do a new one. Where are we at now? What do I know now? What have I learned? But like it needs to be fresh and it needs to be for me, as opposed to being for Nathan or for my therapist. I can share with my therapist. My therapist would find it useful for me to participate in therapy, but I need to do it for me.
Yeah.
So in that context, we were also going through episodes to release them. We've got the first 10 done, except episode number 7 actually is about altars.
Episode number 9 is about altars. Episode number 7 talks about the dead parents.
Oh, I'm so confused. It is hard to look at, so it's hard to listen to.
Yeah.
So which one are we talking about?
We were going to listen to and recap the number 7 where you are talking about dead parents and it being hard to receive care.
Ew.
Yeah.
I already blocked that out. That's why it connected to the retreat, because it was about receiving care. Mm-hmm. So like what's interesting is, interesting, the people who did not get to come to the retreat in person are like struggling with FOMO because they didn't get to be there, right? Even though we're going to share the mapping in the episodes that now people have heard, we're going to put up some of the things. We want to do a virtual version. We'll do other retreats, maybe allegedly. I just said that out loud.
You did. I love it.
It's too soon. I don't know. If I do another retreat, I won't leave the premises. That's up for debate still if we're doing another retreat. Oh my goodness. But the point is that they're having FOMO for missing out on all these things. And those of us who were there in person are like, whoa, that was a lot of care. I need to back way off. What did I just do? Except also we're tending to that and being vulnerable in it and sharing. So part of why I already forgot this, so thank you. Part of why I wanted to recap this episode specifically is because it is about the tending care, tending to receiving care of people who are trying to tend to me, but that is still hard. Yeah. And when that's hard, it actually disrupts relationships.
Yeah.
Right. So like I could be really clinical about it and be like, it doesn't turn towards, it doesn't respond to bids for attention that are appropriate bids. I don't mean that attention is a bad thing. We're supposed to pay attention to each other. But ooh, it's hard receiving care.
It's hard. Yeah.
So I was frustrated that when I thought, yay, look, we're making progress. We're doing the hard, brave thing of putting the episodes out to stay and making a spreadsheet, because the Maxpert taught me how to do spreadsheets.
Yay.
And so when I get scared of this episode is out there, what did I say? Instead of just deleting it, I can look at the spreadsheet and be like, this is what the episode is about. Here's what it references. It's why we voted to put it up in the first place. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that now the episodes can just stay instead of going up and coming down and going up and coming down. Can like disorganized attachment much?
Right.
Oh, yucky. Okay. So let's do this.
Yeah. Okay.
Anything else we need as introduction to this episode?
I don't think so. The only piece I would add is that the, at least for me and my experience of everyone else at the retreat, even though we are saying, whoa, that was a lot, we're also saying, when are we going to do it again? So it's like we're already wanting to reconnect.
Because it was good enough.
Because it was so good. More than good enough. It was so good.
Even with the hard night?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll keep thinking about that.
Okay. So we are starting to listen to episode 7. And I will try to get it queued up so we don't have to listen to the piano. Unless you want to.
No, I'm good. We're good on piano. I wish we were on a road trip.
That would be fun, huh?
Daydreaming.
With pink liquids and pink donuts.
That was terrible. Okay, I'm ready. Let's do this.
This is Emma.
What?
My husband's at the store right now.
Okay, pause already.
I can't run.
What is that?
That's Emma.
No, that's creepy and weird.
What do you mean?
It's all growly.
Well, sometimes she has a gravelly voice from crying or being scared.
Okay.
Are you going to be able to do this?
It's great. I just didn't know that was a thing.
We don't have to.
I'm okay. Thanks for checking. Thank you for sending some care my way. Thanks. Awesome.
Thank you for not just denying it right away.
Okay. This is a 15-minute episode. How can we... How bad can it be?
How bad can it be? That okay. Sounds like you're issuing a challenge to the universe.
I feel like this is not the week to do that.
No.
Okay, I'm ready.
Ready?
Do it. So he's gone for me. I thought I would try to record a podcast so I have time by myself. The children are still at school, but I can hear children. Someone is crying.
Okay. I just want to say that that is still true. 10 years later, uh-huh. It is still true that it is hard to find time to actually do the podcast because there are children around all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you rewind it like 10 seconds?
Yes.
Or is that too much? Okay.
We're still at school, but I can hear children. Someone is crying. Some of them are talking. Someone is laughing and making jokes.
Wait, what?
Yeah. She's starting to see them inside and hear them inside.
And we talked about that on the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm really wrestling right now with like internalized stigma. Because I'm like, why would you get on the podcast and sound like a crazy person? But that is ableist.
Right.
And it is stigma.
Right.
And that is me disparaging myself.
Yes.
And also, what just happened?
Really uncomfortable, right? But it was really good for her to be able to share that, to look at it, and to speak her truth.
I think I am struggling with this piece already because since losing our first therapist, we have worked very hard to box things up. Yeah. So, like, I know in the next 10 episodes that we're going to re-release includes unboxing ourselves, and I feel like there needs to be a new unboxing. I don't mean an episode. Look at your face.
I'm ready.
No. I mean, like, literally with myself.
Yeah.
Of we had to contain that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think that was your post-it and challenge from the retreat was that it was maybe time to do a new circle notebook, which is right. Really a new unboxing of yourself with your therapist. And yourself.
I'm like, this is a thing I'm actually experiencing.
Yeah.
So I think, if I think back on the years of early diagnosis, it was like
I'm doing air quotes for symptoms, bleeding through, right? Like things happening like this, hearing and seeing others, which obviously means I'm not well, which is what is distressing, which is why you go to therapy and, oh, then you get a diagnosis, right?
Right.
And also, since 2020, my year of hell, it is like, we are going to contain nothing and not just dissociate, but daydream ourselves away. Mm-hmm. This is not happening. It's fine. Are we aware of switching still happening? Sure. But are we going to acknowledge it or talk about it or actually function in relationships? No. No, we are not.
A little bit.
Until the retreat and we learn that does not actually work in real life.
Yeah. Well, except that we made it work. Like it's repaired. So it didn't ruin anything permanently.
Even though it felt like it.
It felt like it in the moment. But it is being worked on and repaired. And nothing is actually completely broken. And also, yes, it's probably good for you to not keep doing that.
Please don't do that again.
Yeah, please don't do that.
Ugh. Okay.
Someone wants my hot chocolate. Sometimes I can hear specific things. Sometimes it's just all blurred together.
Okay, I'm sorry I'm stopping it so much. It's really hard. So this is the first piece of noticing the others. Is not just being aware of what we're actually experiencing it. Perhaps also acknowledging that. And also, wait, is that the notebook you've been missing?
I don't think I'm missing a
notebook. No, the gray one.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Sorry, just checking.
It's okay.
So noticing and acknowledging, like both things need to happen. Not just we're noticing things happening, but also acknowledging that we're noticing things happening, which is where I'm struggling right now. But it is doing that work of noticing and acknowledging that is what helps us see the distinctions among parts, peoples.
Right. Yes. Supposedly.
How's that working for you?
That's so great.
I don't remember driving home from therapy. I don't remember therapy. I know we were there. I thought I saw her, and I thought I heard her, but then it was like a dream, and then it went away, and then when I blinked, like just in a moment, time is already gone.
Do you ever feel like that?
Yeah, sometimes.
Like you get to therapy, and then all of a sudden therapy already happened? Or sometimes like... you're in the experience, but also dreaming it. Like, is it really happening, or is this just a dream, and how are you supposed to tell the difference in that?
Yeah, I think I get that one more than it disappearing, except also, like, I will remember being there in the moment, but then later I will not be able to recall what happened. Does that make sense?
Is that what you call retrograde?
Retrograde amnesia.
You say, I don't have amnesia, except I have retrograde amnesia.
Because I don't wake up and have lost the last 10 minutes or 2 days, right? I remember a continuous timeline, but when I look back at it, I can't actually remember what I was doing. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think that is what amnesia is.
I know. But not like, I don't ever like wake up in a conversation and have no idea what we were talking about, really.
Oh, I see.
It's more in after the fact. When I look back at it, it's gone. But in the moment, I feel consistently present.
Even when you're not.
I guess, Someone is.
Several someone.
Sometimes.
Okay.
I was in my car, in my driveway, at home. On the outside, kids were running down the stairs, coming to greet me. They were so excited to see me home, and they were so excited and came running up and hugging me, and I was so glad to hold them, to be close to them, and to be home. Except that it's a funny thing to come home when you don't remember leaving. I'm not even sure how long we were gone. It's snowing today. The days are quiet and still. There's something peaceful about it, the way it blankets the ground. Except the leaves that poke through haunt me.
I don't want to talk about haunting leaves.
Okay.
But I do want to say this is when we were living in Kansas City and thought winter was such a big deal. And that was before we ever lived here.
Yeah. It's a little different here than in Kansas.
Like, just the weekend of the retreat, it snowed so much, and it has not stopped since then until now.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
We kind of are in the middle of a winter storm.
Little did I know. Little did I know. Okay. Wow.
I don't know how, and I don't know why. They're just leaves. It bothers me the way sitting in the foyer bothers me. To look and see from the front door how there are stairs going up and stairs going down. Like an expanded version of a split-level home. Except we have a living room right there by the stairs. But still, to go up to the bedrooms or down to the den, there's something about that that feels like the leaves in the snow. Like something's not right, like something's not now. I don't know what it is. Sometimes these feelings are left in me like clues. But to follow them is to go on a dark path, and it's scary and frightening, and I'm not sure I want to go.
Oh! I just got called out by myself!
You did.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a minute. The experience of being somewhere. What is that, being disoriented? Is that flashbacky?
A little bit, but like almost like a spatial awareness flashback. So like, you know how there's emotional flashbacks? Maybe there's also like a spatial flashback where you're not sure you're really in this space, even though you kind of are in this space. And also in a memory space.
Ugh. There's truth in that, though. That's wild to me that I knew that 10 years ago, because I feel like I'm just now discovering it about how those experiences are like clues. Like, rather than, I feel like that's also when we make the most progress, when we are curious about what we're experiencing and follow those clues, mm-hmm. even though it's hard, as opposed to while shaming ourselves for one, since we've been on that trip the last week.
Yeah.
But also,
denying that the clues are there.
Yeah, that! Denying and just being afraid and not trying.
Yeah.
Because then those feelings of being afraid or not wanting to or being sickened by it or like whatever those feelings are, that is what haunts you, mm-hmm. as opposed to facing that so that those things can go away, seeing what we already went through because it's in the past, it's not happening now. Like, that's so much better, but it takes such courage and tenacity to do.
Yeah. And I think there's a newer piece for you, and you can take this out if you need to. But when you have people in your life who see you and watch you, and like not in a creepy way, but like notice you, they pick up, I pick up on those clues that maybe you don't even see the clues there. And so then when I point them out to you, it's hard for you to even see that they're there and not avoid. Does that make sense?
It's hard.
Yeah.
I think it's another piece that makes relationships hard. Because that happened, I mean, just because we've already talked about it for transparency, there was a layer of that that was hard that happened sort of in the aftermath of the hiccup mm-hmm. after the retreat. And it was hard for me because I couldn't tolerate what I needed to see still. It's yay therapy. Mm-hmm. I will take it to therapy. It's hard for you because there's something you want to talk about that I don't know. And it's hard for us as a, like in our relationship, because it's really the first time that there's been something between us, like that we couldn't just talk through.
Yeah.
And so that in itself causes harm, even when it's not malicious.
Right. And it's not even that we will never be able to talk about it. It's just a pacing thing.
And the boundaries of what's for therapy and
yeah.
what's not.
Yeah.
Those are hard layers. No wonder we call it advanced topics.
I think we are well beyond advanced topics.
What did they call us?
The varsity team.
Oh my goodness. It's really, really hard.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is one thing we talked about before we started recording, that it's frustrating that it's been almost 10 years and the same things are still hard. Like, it's hard differently, and there are some things that are not hard anymore. Right. And also to like listen to this and be like, oh, that's still hard. Like, that's exhausting. That's really yeah. frustrating.
Yeah. And I think it's easy to see something like that, see where you still are working on the same thing and feel like, oh, I haven't made any progress, or I'm not getting anywhere, or I'm wasting my time. But that's dismissing all the good that you have done, all the progress that's been made, because there are lots of things that are different. And it's like the spiral staircase you talk about in your workbook, right? We might get to the same topic, but we're at a whole different level where there's different pieces of it we have to look at. And we've still made progress in the meantime.
I'm experiencing that with my therapist, that like we've known each other more than 6 months. I've known about her and started intake paperwork like a year ago. So, you know, there's that. And trying to really re-engage, except also, like, I haven't even talked about, like, names yet, right? Whether she knows any or not, I haven't gone there because it's so hard to let those therapy walls back down after there's been a rupture in therapy.
Yeah.
Even though this is a new therapist and a different therapist and I'm feeling safe there, or I wouldn't still be going, like this is more progress than in the last 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. So it, in some ways it feels so huge. And also at the same time, like, why is it so hard to just say names?
Yeah.
Why yeah. is that a thing?
That's when it got so hard before.
Because we did.
The walls really came down and then things blew up.
So that is painful. And also at the same time, I am talking with her about things I have never talked about in therapy before at all. Yeah. Not like, hey, I'm coming in and we're going to spend the whole session. Well, one time, the one I did. But mostly it's like without even realizing it, just like truth bombs of trauma drop. And it's like, okay, so we're acknowledging that's a thing. And this is a thing, and this is a thing.
Wow.
So that is new and has mm-hmm. not happened before, even before. So it makes me curious because, or trying to be curious in that I don't have to go through therapy the same way I did before. And also, it's actually healthier, which makes it look different.
Right.
And I experience the same thing relationally with you, that it's not the same as every other relationship I've had. So sometimes it's scary because we expect those scripts or those mm-hmm. reenactments or things. And yet when we do talk about things, when we do talk through things and tend to those things, and you are working just as hard on your stuff as I'm working on. And so like there's that reciprocal, not just reciprocity relationally, but reciprocal working on things. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like we're both doing the work, as they say. And so there are things that happen that are healthy that I've never experienced before. So it's scary because it's different, but different doesn't mean bad.
Right. It just means different.
Okay.
Sometimes I try and I focus on something. But the more I try to figure it out, the more blurry it gets, the more dizzy I get, the more fuzzy it all becomes.
Yes.
Until I forget what it was I was trying to think about, what it was I was trying to remember, what it was I've already forgotten.
This week!
My husband is leaving town next week for work. He'll be gone for a whole week, and I'm really anxious about it. I know I'm an adult, and I can take care of my children, and I love to be with them and spend time together. But they'll go to school during the day, and I'll be home alone all day. And I'll be alone at night after they go to sleep. We have a teddy bear from therapy that our therapist gave us.
That's the bear!
It doesn't feel big enough for a week without my husband. I don't know if I'm strong enough to do it. I don't want something bad to happen or something to go wrong.
You can do it.
Or for me to lose myself. Or my children. The others are there. They are me, but not me. I'm them, but not them.
That's a whole book now! What?
It's a whole book now.
That's wild!
Yeah. Did you know it's been in there for that long?
I did not know that it's been there, me and not me. What?
Yeah. Even Emma knew about it 10 years ago.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Also, it's fun. Like, I'm sorry that she, me, I, whatever, am struggling there. But it's fun to be here 10 years later and be like, no, I'm fine on my own. Like, I feel like that's progress.
Yeah.
It can be really scary to be alone. It can be really scary to be on your own. But I've been doing it for 4 years now, and I'm okay. Yeah. Still struggling sometimes. I mean, not necessarily with that, but, like, single parenting and working and finances, like, all of that is hard. And also, I'm okay. I am okay. So I'm glad that there's one piece of things that like, yes, I'm winning that one.
Absolutely.
We're completely different and completely separate and yet sharing this body in ways I don't know how, in ways that feel so crazy, in ways that I don't want to understand how or sometimes don't want to know. There are clothes that are not mine, shoes that are not mine.
Those are mine.
Jewelry that's never worn, but I find it laying out. Makeup that I don't even know how to put on.
Still don't wear makeup.
I don't know who plays the piano.
Oh.
I don't know who plays the cello. I don't know how to do the work that I see on the computer. I don't know how my children get their chores done.
Well,
I don't know when I eat. It's not that I don't eat. It's not that I don't want to eat. I just don't remember eating.
This is uncomfortable.
But I know that I do. Obviously, I do. Sometimes when I go to write in the notebooks for therapy, the table and the desk are covered in crayons. But my children haven't been home, or markers. And the children are playing outside, or even paints. And this is not what they could have painted. Sometimes I try to read it to learn what's going on. Sometimes the pages blur in front of me and make me nauseous.
It is a hard thing to be a stranger to yourself.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
And it is a hard thing to want to do better and want to be better and also not have capacity to give yourself access to yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know when that gets better. I feel like that's the same place I'm in now, just in a different way.
Yeah. How so?
Well, I mean, then she didn't know anything, right? So, like, we know so much more about DID. Mm-hmm. We know so much more about parts or people or shirts. We have friends in the community and, like, other people in our lives who can even talk about and share their experiences with DID. Like, we're not alone in it the same.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when there's a part or shirt or people or something I don't know, and my brain is like, and you're asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gone.
Yeah.
And you're out. Like, I don't know how to get capacity enough to have capacity to know myself.
Yeah. Well, I think you're working on that.
More therapy. That's why we have to keep going. Why we can't just stop.
Yeah.
To see, oh, like our new book that's coming out. We have to see the world accurately and express ourselves congruently to what we see.
Yeah. That sounds fun.
I'm so excited about the new book. I know that's not what we're talking about right now, but the proof, like the editor's proof, it's going to be here any minute.
Oh, I cannot wait.
Okay, focus.
And my head turns away before I can even stop it. Because seeing the pages or reading what's on them gets too hard so quickly, so easily.
See?
But I'm trying. I don't know how there's a house full of people that I cannot see. I don't know how there's a house full of people inside of me.
Oh, mm-hmm. That makes me nauseous.
If I could ever remember therapy or know that I was there, I don't know what I would say. I'm happy with my husband. I don't have any complaints. He takes good care of me and he's kind. He's funny and he helps with the children and he helps with the cooking and the cleaning. We do everything together. He's my best friend. When we have a disagreement, it's just a difference of opinion and we can talk about it. We don't even have conflicts or arguments.
I feel like that's still true in that we have never had ugly arguments or like disagreements that were hateful. When we do have disagreements, or like even talking about religious trauma last year or seasons the year before, like we're able to have conversations about it. That's a strong point. And also, he struggled with capacity as whatever is going on with him medically that they're still trying to figure out. And also, I learned that there was more to relationships than that.
Mm-hmm.
That those are good things for safety. And so it's hard to listen to that, not because I disagree necessarily, so much as there's a lot of pain of undaydreaming about to hit.
Yeah.
And I feel the weight of that.
Yeah. Well, and maybe for her, in her experience, all those things were true. And some of those other things that you have since realized you need in a relationship, someone else held those. So she wasn't even aware of them.
Oh, because DID.
Yeah. So her experience, yeah, she had what she needed. Because her role was to be.
So this goes back to the retreat feedback about I need to be aware of others inside. for lots of reasons, but one of them being because they have needs that I don't know unless I know them.
Right.
Which means my perception of myself and the world around me is not actually accurate until I listen better to them.
Bingo.
That hurts.
Yeah.
And the children are good. They're not perfect, but they're so well behaved, especially for all they've been through.
Aww.
So I don't know what I would say or how I ask for help, except with understanding what's wrong with me. But that's what makes it hard.
I'm sorry I'm stopping again, but I want to say this is an example of what we've been talking about too, and I think comes up for a lot of people in the community, that life, like, it doesn't have to be something terrible that happens for us to ask for help.
Right.
Sometimes terrible things happen, and that's important to ask for help. And also,
sometimes you just need help.
Right. And that's okay.
Yeah. Because life is hard. And we are a pack animal.
Connection means healing.
Yeah.
But that's my feeling, is that guttural mm-hmm. moan of like, oh, I can't even.
Mm-hmm. Because to understand what's wrong with me is to remember what I can't understand.
Whoa, wait. What just happened?
I think that was an Emma truth bomb from 10 years ago.
What just happened? Do you remember what I just said?
Oh, I don't know if I can.
You retrograded already?
Already. Something about, in order to know what she needs or what's wrong with her, she has to be able to remember what she can't see or understand what she can't remember.
Can we rewind it? What?
Okay, you ready?
But that's what makes it hard. Because to understand what's wrong with me is to remember what I can't understand.
Whoa!
To understand what is wrong with me, I have to remember what I can't understand.
How do you guys even listen to the podcast?
Because it's amazing.
To understand what's wrong with me, I have to see...
Remember
what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Why does that feel way too applicable right now? Like, I feel it all the way in my core. Mm-hmm. Also, I feel a little nauseous.
Do we need to break?
No, please. Let's get this done.
Keep going.
Rip that Band-Aid off and take it to therapy and be like, here's my disgusting. Okay. I don't even know how to comment on that. Gonna let it land and try to absorb it.
That might be a post-it note for therapy.
To understand what is wrong with me, I have to remember what I don't understand. Goodness.
Well done, Emma from the past.
Well done, Emma from the past. Thanks for the sucker punch.
And why all this happened the way it did? Two of my children have some medical problems that mean they're in the hospital a lot. I had a lot of injuries growing up, but nothing like the kind of illnesses these kids have. Maybe that's what I need therapy for. That's why I thought I was going to therapy.
No.
Was from the trauma, like the medical trauma.
That is because the people who referred me back to therapy after the parents died were the doctors who saw what was inside me when I had surgery for cancer.
Oh, it was the same.
They were like, this is scar tissue and it needs to be addressed in therapy.
Wow. Wow.
That is what she's talking about. Yeah, we don't have to talk about that right now.
Yeah.
Because I don't need to understand what is wrong with me, so I don't have to remember what I don't understand. I'm just kidding. Oh, that really hurts.
Do you know what I just realized?
What?
That's one of the things that happens in therapy, is our therapists get to be a container to hold the pieces that we can see and then we forget. They get to keep them for us and help us see them again when we're ready.
So that we can see them and remember them and understand them all at the same time.
Right.
And on our own, we can kind of do pieces of that.
We bring pieces of them separately to our therapist, right? But then the therapist can help us put them all together and hold on to them.
I like that, because lots of times when we're talking about that, people think like what we're piecing together are the puzzles of our parts. Like this part's supposed to go to this part and connects to that part. Like the parts are the puzzle. Mm-hmm. But that's not true. The parts are the picture on the box.
Yeah.
Our people are the picture on the box. The puzzle pieces that fit together are like the sensory experience, the memory, the what we need to see, what we're feeling, what we need to understand, expressing that. Having access to all of those things at once, that is putting the pieces together.
Yeah.
And so our therapist holding those pieces until we're able to put them together is not the same as our therapist is responsible for our part.
Right.
We are the peoples. Right? Which is why we can have healthy dependence on our therapist and still exist outside of therapy.
Yeah.
How's that feel?
Good.
Not moral judgment. Is it good? Is it bad?
No, I mean, it feels helpful to know. Like, you know how I joke with my therapist, she asks if she says something that's too much, and I tell her, well, if it's too much, I'll just forget it, so it's okay.
Right, exactly.
But then, like, knowing that that's part of what happens in therapy is that they hold on to those pieces that we just forget because it's too much. So we take them, and we can drop them off and leave them there until we have capacity to take them home with us again. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I like that. It feels safer.
It does, right?
Yeah.
It also somehow is more tolerable because the pieces are still mine.
Mm-hmm.
My peoples and parts are still mine. I am one of them. Like, I don't mean mine possessive, but it's not because of my therapist.
Right.
Okay. Whew. I had to get a breath for a minute there unexpectedly. Shaking my hand, shake it off. Okay.
Ready?
From all that we've been through as a family, with life flight helicopters and hospital stays and being separated, that's how I lost 3 whole years.
Those were hard years.
I know I was in the hospital with the baby, but I don't remember that. I mean, I'm aware of it. How can I be aware of something I don't remember? That doesn't make sense.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Other things I can't remember or be aware of. And other things I remember so clearly, I don't know how I forgot anything else. The only other thing I could think of that maybe I should talk about with my therapist is just about my dead parents.
Whoa.
I mean, my parents have died. So maybe I should talk about that.
I just want to document. We have still not talked about that. Not in 10 years have we talked about dead parents.
Other than in referencing that you have dead parents.
Dead parents. It breaks one of the social contracts of my family.
Yeah.
We talked about social contracts on the retreat. It's in the new book. Talking about parents at all. Talking, telling, breaks a social contract of family of origin.
Yeah.
So why do that? Because it does not end well.
Yeah.
I tell the wrong people the wrong things and people die. That's mm-hmm. a problem. That's my contract.
Yeah. Can I give Emma a message from 10 years later?
Oh my goodness.
If she wants to know what happened in those 3 years in the hospital, there's a whole book about it. That has the story.
Keeping Kyrie.
Keeping Kyrie. It's a lovely story. And it has a lot of those things.
If you know you have DID when you write two memoirs.
That you also don't remember what's inside of.
Yep. Oh, well, that's public, so.
Here we go. Is that okay?
Yeah, but I guess I need to add it to the website before. People might not like that because it's about the outside kids and.
Well, yeah.
Even some of, like, how on earth do we end up in the church?
Yeah.
Like, how that happened in a very idealized way.
Right.
And what I think people who listen to podcasts understand, I don't know if I've said it on the podcast because I don't know what I've said on the podcast, but I feel like part of how that happened that's obviously not in the book because we didn't understand it yet is that I feel like that church appropriated my vulnerability from shiny happy mm-hmm. and that experience. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's not clear in the book.
Yeah.
But the ideal version of this was my experience, like that part, that shirt, that person's experience is right. in the book.
Which is valid. And I think your listeners appreciate all those pieces of you, even the ones that are focused on the outside children and religion, like their faith practice, they still can appreciate that.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Also, you don't have to.
No, it makes sense. That's the whole point, right? Is to bring my pieces and parts together.
Yeah.
And that's a part of our story. It's a big part of our story. That book is very different because it uses feminine narrative structure, which we actually learn through Hebrew poetry. So like the middle chapter is like the climax of the book instead of the last chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the chapter before and after that parallel each other, and the chapter before and after that, it's a parallelism mm-hmm. book. So in Keeping Kyrie, the top part of each chapter tells one story, and then the rest of each chapter tells a different piece of the story.
Yeah.
So some people it's a little confusing, but it's that way intentionally because we were in Israel most of the writing that and studying Hebrew deeply at that mm-hmm. time.
I really enjoyed reading it. So.
Did you think it was coherent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's similar, coherent, similar to the other memoir, where there is jumping around with time, but that in itself feels very congruent for the experience of DID.
Maybe someday I'll write a third memoir and it will just go in order, linearly. I can't even say the word! Linearly.
We have some shirts missing right now, I think.
Okay, we'll just talk about that another time, but I will add it to the store.
Yeah.
Oh, I almost threw up when I said that.
You don't have to. Only if you want to.
Okay.
You can decide later.
No, it's good background. It tells about getting my cochlear implants and mm-hmm. things like that. Yeah. Okay.
My father had some kind of lymphoma, and my mother had ovarian cancer. Not at the same time, but that's how they both died.
I just want to say in an episode after this, it clarifies that they did both have cancer. My mother had cancer when she died, but she died from the car accident. Right. Like, that's what killed her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that's not clear, like if she doesn't know or is fuzzy or if it's just like English language,
yeah.
But because I want to be transparent and don't want to get in trouble for saying things wrong,
right.
They did both have cancer, but my mother was killed before she died of her cancer.
Right.
Okay.
My father never forgave me.
Oh, what?
But I don't know for what.
Oh.
I ran away from home when I was 17, and I know that that made them angry. Made my father angry. They were divorced, you know. My parents. My mother, who had been unwell for some time. She also had a mean streak. She was addicted to pain pills.
Whoa. This is a lot of breaking the contract.
Yeah.
And I had no idea all of that came out on the podcast, much less that early.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was there.
Does it need to come down?
It's a good question. I need to think about it. I mean, it's not wrong. And also, I don't want to be unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really, really tricksy for telling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think now, 10 years later in the podcast, people who have listened to the whole podcast or people who read the memoir know more of those pieces now, because it has to do with what happened in college. That's what he wasn't going to forget me for, is getting escorted off the college campus.
Yeah.
And yeah, my mom, that part, that shirt, that people's, I'm trying to settle on words. Like, it's not, when she says unwell, she means bat crazy. Like, that's really hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the ableist terms, except that also, like, really, really unwell.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what's weird, not weird about my mom, but weird about that experience, is that my mother actually had a car accident almost identical to what killed her. So when she was killed, the Reader's Digest version. I don't know if it's in If Tears Were Prayers. I know it's in Keeping Kyrie. But basically, there was a drunk driver, well, who was really on pills, but also a veteran trying to better his life. Like, you could tell the story either way, and we told it both ways. But regardless, kind of playing chicken with a semi, that ended badly. And I'm oversimplifying. But the two of them crashed together, flipped around right in front of my mother, who was driving in another lane the other way, and crashed right into them.
Mm.
And so it was like a head-on to a dead stop on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she was killed.
Yeah.
But when I was in, I think, eighth grade, if I can be present enough for my own timeline, she was actually hit head-on on the highway by a state patrolman who fell asleep at the wheel.
Whoa.
And she was pulled out of the car in almost the same position in which she was when she was killed. And so it was like this bizarre experience of lightning striking twice.
Mm-hmm.
But it was since that accident where she was validly given pain medication after back surgery because of that accident that she then began to be addicted to pain pills.
Right.
So not justifying or excusing, but because I've made enough progress to hold a little bit of both,
mm-hmm.
that to be able to more fully tell that story in an accurate way, but also the pills did make her mean. They made her really mean.
Right.
And there were already problems. And so for that to sort of then become exponential, it's tricksy because in some ways, like, I don't want to get too detailed for the podcast, just for people's safety, but I feel like in some ways, some of the things my mother struggled with when I was a child that were absolutely not okay or terrible. I mean, were not absolutely not okay and were terrible. I don't mean to minimize that. And also, as an adult with adult resources, I could get myself out of those situations differently than I could as a child, right?
Right.
The pain pills changed that.
Mm-hmm.
And increase the relational trauma. So I think that's what made that uniquely hard in my experience of here's the history of all the traumas. That's why that was complicated, I think. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I appreciate the context with the pain pills, because it was that time where so many people were being prescribed, over-prescribed, because, you know, there's the whole pharmaceutical debate where they were being paid to prescribe. And so right. It wasn't like your mother had this moral failure of being addicted to something. It was like a pandemic-ish kind of thing in our country where lots of people were struggling with that, not even through their own fault.
Absolutely.
And it really did change people's personalities and make them mean sometimes.
It was really hard. Like, I think she got a DUI once that was not about alcohol. It was about pills.
Right.
So, in fact, when we got the call about the car accident that killed her, and they were like, we have to do a toxicology report on everybody that was involved in the accident, we were like, oh, she's not going to pass that. Yikes. But there was nothing in her system that was not prescribed, but it was also too much.
Yeah.
Well, like, both things were true on paper. That was my introduction to holding both.
Wow.
Right? Okay, that was a lot. My apologies.
Mm-hmm. And it caused lots of problems. But that's just life, right? Caring for your aging parents. It was exhausting and it was hard. I don't know if I did it well, but I know that I tried my best to care for them until they died.
Again, clarifying. When my father got cancer, he actually specifically invited the whole family over to let them know about his cancer diagnosis, except for me. I was not included in that conversation. And not included for some time, like not welcome, which was already a thing. And they would see that as natural consequences because of the college, right? So this is all these years later, but I'm still held in shiny, happy, shunning land.
Still being punished, even with knowing that your father is dying.
Right.
Because of what you did or didn't do.
Right. Once he got to the point of, like, I am dying in the hospital, then I was, for a brief season, allowed to come visit. That did not last long, and I was removed again, and that's a whole thing that I don't want to talk about now. But I want to clarify that, because I'm talking about caring for the parents. So really, what that is mostly about is that, and I think this is in the Keeping Kyrie book, that after joining the church, I thought that reconnecting with my family was what I was supposed to do. I understand now a whole other context about that push from the church now that I did not understand at the time. Mm-hmm. But that included that I am basically, this is religious trauma, I am basically responsible for my family after death as much as I am in life. And that is very specific to this church. I'm not talking about like, yay, we're together in heaven later. I'm talking about very specific, I am responsible to gather my family and unite them. Mm-hmm. So as part of that, I reached out to both of my parents after a decade of no contact. My father did not respond until the cancer thing later. Mm-hmm. My mother responded fairly quickly. We had some very intense reunions because of the pills. Mm-hmm. And I also realized that both because of the pills and also because of maybe what is possibly some early dementia, but could have just been side effects from the pills, that she was not well entirely on her own. There were some ways she was functioning great and doing well, but there were lots where she was not and she needed support. Because I was in the appropriated, shiny, happy church, and it was suddenly my responsibility to gather my family and unite them and to be good enough, shiny, happy enough, I moved her into my house, which was a whole thing. And she lived with me until Nathan and I got married. And then she was killed right after that. Mm-hmm. So that's that period in time that she's talking about.
Caring for aging parents. Yeah.
Wow. This got real, real quick.
I did try to warn you.
Is it too much?
No.
Like, for the podcast, I mean? No. I don't mean for me. I can decide that for me in therapy, but...
For the podcast, no, I don't think so. I think people are good at pacing for themselves and pausing or skipping when they need to.
Okay.
And I know lots of people take it to their therapists, so...
Okay.
Maybe I should talk to her about that.
Yes, yes, you should, Past Emma.
Sometimes when things get really blurry, in therapy, I can hear her, the therapist, I can hear her telling me her name, and that we're in her office, and that it's safe. I'm safe at home with my husband in our house. I don't know why it's such a relief to be at the therapy office and be safe there. I don't know why. I don't know why I think that I've been unsafe.
Can I just say, I think the answer to that connects to what you were saying earlier. We can be safe enough in our apartments or homes or whatever in real life, and also feel so much safer in some ways mm-hmm. with our therapist. But I think it's because that's where the pieces are. Mm. Like, if they're our container and holding those pieces for us until we can put them where they go, then it makes sense. Like, there's a relief in being back with my pieces.
Mm. Like, reunited.
Yes. Which is fascinating, because sometimes we're like, oh, I'm too dependent on my therapist, or, oh, I need my therapist too much. I need. But it's really us that we're needing.
Yeah. Oh, that's like a punch. That's like, what if part of what's so distressing is that there's that constant aching? I'm picturing a magnet, like, always trying to get to the metal, like, so we're always trying to find ourselves but also not being able to, and there's just that constant emptiness.
Part of our attach cry is for ourselves to get to exist.
Yeah.
Which is maybe why it's so big.
So it's not even okay. I think this is
helping. Okay?
No, I think it's helping me put something together, because I know that it's important to tend to our littles, and a part of me gets very frustrated because we've always had to care for ourselves. So
right.
Why do we keep having to care for ourselves?
Right.
But what if the attach cry that our littles are feeling are not for an external parent, but therefore the part of us that they know is there but is not there?
Yes.
And so
yes.
It's not even about caring for ourselves. It's just about, like, picking ourselves up.
Yes.
Legit, just gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know what to add to that. So many of us already had to parent ourselves. It's not that we need re-parenting in that. We're already the ones who did it.
Right.
So to ask us to reparent ourselves feels traumatizing
mm-hmm.
because we're the ones getting called out for failing when right. we're the ones who parented ourselves.
It's like telling us the cure for the poison is more of the poison.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like the same way that cognitive worksheets or things like that don't work if your left brain or your frontal cortex is not online.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing, it's not about doing more of what you've already had to do. It's just recognizing that those parts of you are still there and need you.
Yeah.
That you need each other.
Yeah.
Do Do you need a post-it note?
No, I need a vomit bag.
I thought, is my chair breaking? But no, I was just spinning.
Oh my goodness.
Oh.
Are you okay?
Oh no, that was a great one.
Thanks, Past Emma.
How do you guys even listen to this stuff? Oh my goodness. Oh. Okay, please tell me we're almost finished.
We have 5 minutes left.
How bad can 5 minutes be?
Don't say it.
Okay.
Today I learned about the ID that all of us together are called a system, and that each of us individual are called altars, or some people have other names for them. And I learned that some people say plural instead of multiple because it's more inclusive for people who don't have as much amnesia or for people who have DID but are functioning well.
Oh, that's you!
I don't know what functioning well would look like for me.
Oh, still true. Not there
maybe
yet.
Maybe being less afraid. Oh. Maybe being less anxious.
That's true.
Maybe understanding more of what was going on around me.
Mm-hmm. Progress.
And where I had been and what I had done. Or where they had been and what they had done. Being able to care well for my husband and children, I guess.
Yeah. That wore me out.
And my nightmares. I have such nightmares.
Oh, still true.
I think she starts talking about the nightmares now.
Oh, snap. Why? Why would we do that?
Buckle up.
Need better sleep to be considered functional, I think. I'm so tired. I had nightmares again last night, but I don't want to talk about it.
Then don't. Stop.
But I will say having my husband know about the DID and having a good therapist who's really helping me.
That hurts.
And that I feel safe with. It does feel like for the first time, the ground is beneath my feet.
For a minute.
Even though it's also hard.
Yeah.
And often scary.
You are the ship.
Maybe I just don't feel so alone anymore. I'm trying to make friends.
Oh, no.
On the groups or others with DID or no, or learning how to be supportive because so many people have helped me. It's not an easy thing, but I'm trying. There's so much to learn and it's hard to process. I try to learn. I try to read some of the articles people have shared or listen to some of the other podcasts or the videos to watch. But too much of it and it all just gets blurry and then I don't remember. And time has slipped away again.
Retrograde amnesia.
Mm-hmm. It's like trying to hold sand in your hand.
I still say that. It's still true.
Or trying to speak color.
What?
Or trying to see feelings.
Ew.
There's just so much disconnected. I listened to the podcast about going to therapy and the deer. I would have never in a million years thought to look up what that meant, what the symbol meant, or to try and change it into something good. I don't know how you do that. I mean, I want to practice good skills that help, but it's really hard to implement when you just don't know anything.
Can I say something about that that's completely off topic? I took my trees, my art projects from the retreat to therapy. This is really hard for me to say. They were very emotional. There was very much memory time stuff surfacing. And for people who have read If Tears Were Prayers, the memoir, the second memoir, there's a story about a fire. And there's a story about loss. And it's hard, and I can't believe I'm talking about it at all right now, like directly. And I don't think it's wise for me or the podcast for me to go into details, but that came up because of the art project. And so I cried in the group during the retreat, but also at therapy, this came up, and just barely, and I was about to get very, very slippery. Like, I could feel myself falling away, and I was trying to stay present, but things were blurry. I'm not sure what I was saying. But do you know what my therapist said?
What?
My therapist said, what would the lows think of you now? And I was like, first of all, I lost it. And yeah. I started sobbing. Maybe it felt like an hour. I'm sure it was like 20 minutes or 1 minute. But like, and I was like hanging on by my nails, my teeth, the nails of my teeth. What the do you skin hang on of your by? Teeth. The skin of your teeth don't have skin.
I know, it's a weird saying.
That's it though, skin of my teeth?
Well, not by the skin of my teeth.
Well, that's what I was doing, which is now more horrifying than originally understood. And what came out of me was, like, before I could stop it, like, I don't even know who that was. It's like when you walk past someone in the hallway and you're like, do you even live here? Who are you? Right?
Just random stranger in your house.
Yes, except in my head, right? So like very little, but what was said, like the answer was, they would give me a hug and something to eat. Which then made me lose it again because I was coming off of this hard week, right? Like, and mm-hmm. I hadn't eaten for days, like trying, cannot, not restricting intentionally. And I don't mean to activate people. I mean, as a trauma response, my body was not moving things. I mm-hmm. could not eat. Mm-hmm. So like I'm crying again. And I think, thanks a lot, therapist, for the truth bomb of that emotional throat punch. Really appreciate you wanting to get all your points in therapy for being the cool therapist. Thanks a lot, right? These things are in my head. Mm-hmm. I'm sobbing. She doesn't stop. She does this thing, like what Emma was just saying. She does this thing where she's like, oh, as if I want to continue the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, I think that this would be a beautiful conversation because they would be so delighted to know that you just released a new book. What would that be like to tell them that you just released a new book? How amazingly funny would it be to tell them about the internet and that you have a podcast and what all of that means? What would it be like for them to know that you were this famous doctor and all educated with your PhD and about to give the plenary presentation at ISSTD? And what would it be like to tell them, like, stop, mm-hmm. what was that? Lost it.
Yeah.
Lost it. And cried probably, not kidding, maybe hours. Like,
yeah.
I don't even want to give more details because it was so sacred and I don't want to give all of it away. But it seems really important to share because it was that.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I don't know what that was. But it was so powerful, and it was turning around what was the deepest grief into something beautiful and present.
Yeah.
Like, it was like instead of blending peoples, it was blending memory time and now time, except in a good way.
Not in like a fake daydreaming, maladaptive daydreaming, or dissociated way.
And not in a memory time invading now time way. Right. Fully present in now time, except complete shift of perspective and healing memory time, mm-hmm. tending to memory time, but also connecting to memory time. Like what?
Wow.
And also, who the hell was that?
They just walked down the hall.
What are you doing here? Right? Like, who is that? What am I supposed to do about it? And also, here's the thing. It was so tender without it being any kind of inappropriate boundaries, right? Like, mm-hmm. it was not tender of, like, something of my therapist trying to parent me. Mm-hmm. It was tender about my connection with my own past. So it was so boundaried, and I say that because it's important to me after what happened with my previous therapist, right? Mm-hmm. So it was so safe and so boundaried and also so healing that now, instead of even being afraid of, like, who was that little I'd never seen before, it's like, okay, now you've got my attention and I'm curious. Because she somehow instituted a relationship with that part. Shirt, people, person. Without me even looking. Like, what just happened?
That's amazing.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes so much sense. It's really, really fascinating that she was able to do that.
Yeah, I'm really upset about it.
I'm sure.
I'm upset that she scored a point.
Half a point. No, I'm kidding. She gets a full point for that.
At least one. Okay, let's wrap this up before we talk about anything else.
I mean, we've still got 1 minute, one and a half minutes.
Goodness.
Ready?
But I'm learning some things. I learned today that I can freeze an orange and then use it as a grounding thing, like smell it and touch it. I never would have thought of that. I also learned that one thing that can help feel safe or, like, help with grounding is to turn on all the lights and shut all the doors. I never would have thought of that either, but I tried it today and it really helped. I guess that's all I can say today. I want to be more helpful and I want to share more, but I don't remember therapy and the notebooks are gone, so I can't even read something. But I wanted to check in and say hello. I'm really grateful for your friendship and your support as I'm learning about this, and for the things that you've shared to help me learn. Thank you for listening, and...
Oh my goodness. I'm just going to stop that there. Let's have the phone back. I love that it ends with where we started by learning to be safe and connect through community, mm-hmm. and that this is where we are now. Even the new website and the community that we love so much now, that we have together built people through, again, relationships, that's where healing happens. Yeah. I had no idea that was in there, but I love that it is, because it's absolutely part of our story.
Yeah, and why it's so important to keep connecting, even when it's really hard and there's a hiccup.
And even when your therapist gets all the points. Ugh. So annoying.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this with me. I know that was epic and not like on the top 10 list of exciting ways to spend your afternoon. That was very kind.
It was lovely. And maybe some mic drop things that I need to take to therapy, so.
Go team.
Yay. The varsity team.
Thank you for listening. Your support of the podcast, the workbooks, and the community means so much to us as we try to create something together that's never been done before. Not like this. Connection brings healing, and
You can join us on the community at www.systemspeakcommunity.com. We'll see you there.